Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tianlu, coming up in this edition. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has made clear that a full-scale attack on Rafah will happen as Israel reduces troops in southern Gaza. Former Ecuadorian Vice President Jorge Glass has been hospitalized after he fell ill in detention amid a diplomatic row between Ecuador and Mexico. And China says the U.S. Treasury Secretary's visit has led to important consensus on economic and financial cooperation. We begin with the Middle East. Hamas has rejected Israel's proposal relayed from Qatari and Egyptian mediators. The militant group says it did not meet any of the demands of Palestinian factions. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has set a date for an offensive in Rafah, which is the last shelter for displaced Palestinians in Gaza. Associated Press correspondent Sam Menick fills us in from Jerusalem.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu doubled down on Monday and said that a date had been set for this ground offensive into Rafah. He didn't specify when it would be, but he has remained adamant throughout that going into Rafah is essential in order to achieve Israel's war aims, which is eradicating Hamas. And he is saying this despite international pushback. On Monday, an official Israeli official said that they'd bought about 40,000 tents to start this evacuation, but much of Gaza has been reduced to rubble. Two researchers based in the United States who use satellite imagery to track the destruction say that more than 50% of the buildings around Khan Yunus have been destroyed during the war. Now, this comes as some of the biggest amount of aid has come into Gaza on Sunday. There were 100 trucks, potentially more, that came in. And this is after the United States issued one of its starkest warnings to Israel, saying that if it didn't change the humanitarian situation in Gaza, it was going to rethink its support for Israel. Israel said that it was going to open more aid crossings, including the Erez crossing in the north, as well as the port of Ashdod, and work closer with Jordan to get more trucks in by road. The United States is also pushing Israel to come up with a ceasefire deal to get the hostages home and to have a ceasefire of this war that is causing a devastating humanitarian situation.
That was Sam Menick with the Associated Press. The United Nations Security Council has referred Palestine's application for full UN membership to a special committee. But the Palestinian request is facing hurdles from Israel and the United States. Jody Jacobs has more from New York.
It was the only thing on the agenda in both the General Assembly and the Security Council on Monday, Palestine's application for full membership at the United Nations.
You want us to be a full member like you, sit with you. You would welcome that. An overwhelming majority of members have repeatedly expressed support for Palestine's full membership as an integral part of their support for our independence.
But in response, Israel says it will not support such a move. Its ambassador lambasting the United Nations for not adequately condemning Hamas or holding it to account for its actions on October the 7th.
This will be the vilest reward of the vilest crimes. The Security Council is deliberating, granting the perpetrators and supporters of October 7th full membership status in the UN.
At the Security Council, a decision was taken to refer the application to its admissions committee, which will meet on Monday at the instruction of the Council's president. The matter will be debated and discussed behind closed doors. Following this, the committee can recommend Palestine's admission or it could put it to a vote. Russia insists that no time must be wasted and the matter must be resolved within a limited time.
Limited time is within, say, days or week or two, perhaps. We are not planning to allow to drag the issue indefinitely, like perhaps some members of the Council wish.
Palestine last applied for full membership to the United Nations back in 2011, but without adequate support, the matter never came before the Security Council for a vote. As was the case then, it is the United States which is seen as the biggest obstacle to Palestine's membership. With its veto power, it argues that full membership should only come for Palestine after it's negotiated a comprehensive peace agreement with Israel.
That was Jody Jacobs on Palestine's bid to become a full member of the United Nations. In South America, prison authorities in Guayaquil say former Ecuadorian Vice President Jorge Glass was hospitalized after he fell ill in detention. He allegedly refused prison food. Glass was removed from Mexico's embassy in Quito in a police raid last week. It prompted Mexico to sever diplomatic ties with Ecuador. There has been condemnation from the region following the embassy raid. The community of Latin American and Caribbean states has gathered to address the diplomatic row between the two countries. Nicolas Suarez has more.
Honduran President Xiomara Castro, the pro tempore president of the community of Latin American and Caribbean states, said the violations of the American Convention on Asylum and the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations by the Ecuadorian government are unacceptable, prompting the emergency meetings attended by all foreign ministers of the member states. Mexico's foreign minister, Alicia Bárcena, announced that they will lodge a complaint against Ecuador at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Colombian President Gustavo Petro announced plans to ask for precautionary measures from the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights in favor of Jorge Glass, alleging his right to asylum was violated and that his life is at risk. Meanwhile, Ecuadorian authorities maintain that their actions were lawful, since Jorge Glass is a convicted criminal and therefore cannot be granted asylum.
The decision of the President of the Republic was taken in the face of a real risk of imminent escape of the citizen required by justice in the exercise of her sovereignty. For Ecuador, a criminal cannot be considered a person persecuted for political reasons when he has been convicted with an enforceable sentence and arrest warrant issued by the police authorities.
As Ecuador grapples with the fallout after police stormed the Mexican embassy in Quito, the international community is closely watching for developments, underscoring the importance of upholding diplomatic conventions and respecting asylum rights.
That was Nicolas Suarez in Quito. Turning to Africa. In Sudan, the Rapid Support Forces and its allied Arab militias have reportedly killed at least 15 people during several days of attacks on a number of villages located west of El Fasher city. There are fears of large-scale ethnic violence amid escalating tensions between the ISF and movements that are supporting the Sudanese military in North Darfur. Naba Mohideen reports from Port Sudan.
These attacks on Zaghawa villages, a traditional Minnawi stronghold, come days after Minnawi declared war against the RSF to defend civilians. It targeted the villages of Darma, Karu, Asbani, Jaruf, Hilla Muhammad Ali and Hilla Abdullah. Many residents were forced to flee to the Zamzam camp after their homes were destroyed. Since war broke out in April last year, RSF militia have been trying to take Al Fasher city, one of the main cities in North Darfur. However, some Darfur groups announced they would form a new armed movement, excluding the ones that signed the Juba Peace Agreement in 2020. They say the new movement will be neutral and facilitate communication between the Sudanese army and the Rapid Support Forces. For almost a year, the Darfur region has turned into the epic center of the war in Sudan, with millions of people starving and fleeing to neighboring Chad. There are concerns that the new attacks carried out by the RSF paramilitary troops could plunge the region into a longer civil war.
That was Naba Mohideen on violence in Sudan. Staying in Africa, mosquito-borne diseases like dengue are spreading into new areas as temperatures rise, curtailing efforts to eradicate them. An official with the Drugs for Neglected Diseases initiative says global warming will cause a catastrophic spike in vector-borne diseases. Inoxicolia reports from Nairobi.
Neglected tropical diseases are a diverse group of 21 diseases that include dengue fever, sleeping sickness, bilharzia, kalazar, leprosy, buruli ulcer, and trachoma. Many of them are vector-borne, spread by flies, mosquitoes, and other insects, and are mostly found in poor communities in tropical and subtropical regions of the world. Simon Bolo, head of Leishmaniasis Success at the Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative in Kenya, says a warmer climate accelerates the life cycle of parasites, thereby increasing their population.
When we have an upsurge of the vectors, then it means also that the infection rate increases, and so is the incidence.
He says climate change-induced floods and heavy rainfall is leading to the proliferation of mosquito populations, while longer droughts in Africa are also forcing many people and disease vectors to migrate elsewhere in search of water, leading to neglected tropical diseases spreading with them.
In Ethiopia, in 2022, WHO reported a resurgence with about 6 cases confirmed in the southern part of Ethiopia, which the last time that I think cases of sleeping sickness was seen were about 50 years ago. And this is because of movement of cattle in search of water due to the ongoing drought. And as a result, human beings who, of course, take care of the animals were exposed to sassafras that transmit the disease.
Bolo says warmer temperatures will speed up the geographical spread of mosquitoes to less affected regions like the US and Europe. According to DNDi, more than 100 countries are recording dengue fever transmission.
The effects on the public health globally is going to be devastating. One, for example, leishmaniasis, visceral leishmaniasis, if not treated, is fatal.
According to WHO, NTDs affect more than 1 billion people. The African region bears close to 40% of that global burden. And in Kenya, 18 out of the 20 NTDs listed by the WHO are suspected, confirmed, or endemic to the country, affecting almost 25 million people.
That was Enoch Sekolia reporting. Finally, in China. China says the visit by U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has led to important consensus on economic and financial cooperation. Yellen had in-depth consultations and discussions with high-level Chinese officials. Dong Xue brings us key takeaways from this trip.
As U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen wrapped up her second trip to China at a press briefing held in Beijing on Monday, she reaffirmed that the United States is not seeking to decouple from China.
During conversations this week, I underscored again that the United States does not seek to decouple from China. Our two economies are deeply integrated, and a wholesale separation would be disastrous for both of our economies. Even as we take action to diversify our supply chains, we seek to preserve the broader trade and investment relationship that can benefit American workers and firms.
Over the course of 5 days, Yellen had wide-ranging meetings with the Chinese leaders, local officials, academics, students, and American executives, both in the southern metropolis of Guangzhou and then the capital, Beijing. And at the press briefing in Beijing just before her departure after a five-day visit, Yellen outlined three areas in which both sides have made significant progress. First, starting intensive exchanges on balanced growth in the domestic and global economies. And second, expanding cooperation in anti-money laundering. And third, resolving to continue financial technical exchanges. And Yellen also raised the concerns about what she described as overcapacity in industries like EVs, solar panels, and lithium batteries. While Yellen's trip is obviously a part of efforts by Washington to maintain open lines of communication with Beijing. And lastly, you know, attempting to continue dialogue, Yellen also said that just as military leaders need a hotline during a crisis, American and Chinese financial regulators also must be able to communicate with each other to prevent financial stresses from turning into serious problems, having tremendous ramifications for citizens as well as to the international community.
That was Zhong Xue on the U.S. Treasury Secretary's visit to China. Recapping today's headlines, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has made clear that a full-scale attack on Rafah will happen as Israel reduces troops in southern Gaza. Former Ecuadorian Vice President Jorge Glass has been hospitalized after he fell ill in detention amid a diplomatic row between Ecuador and Mexico. And China says U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's visit has led to important consensus on economic and financial cooperation. That's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tianlu. Thank you for listening.